your day, or dream of places far away, or try to set your world apart. Always end up where you start.
Hi, everybody. We're live.
I've done Marco's favorite thing in the entire world.
You've bought something?
Well, yeah. Well, so it's both your
you go to a fish
sarcastic.
It was a sarcasm.
Well, I meant it as sarcastic, but it's actually also genuine. I did buy something, which is Marco's favorite thing. But your least favorite thing is that literally 50 minutes ago, I basically tore apart my entire desk.
Oh.
So if any of this recording works, and or if I sound even remotely decent, success. But who knows? If I sound like garbage, it's not Marco's fault. It's not John's fault. It's my fault.
Blame the third-party RAM.
No, it's not third-party RAM. Not this time. No, I finally, just this evening, I finally received the shipment of the CalDigit TS5 Plus that I had ordered a couple of weeks back. And I am very excited. I have only used it for a few minutes, and my initial review is it's just like the TS4, but with faster Ethernet and a few more ports.
Wait, but so you didn't really change anything. You just swapped out one component with the component that it does the same job made by the same company with one bigger number at the end?
Yes, but it doesn't sound as dramatic that way, John.
All right. Well, we'll see how dramatic it is. All I can say is you sound fine over Zoom, so worst case scenario, we can use that backup track for you.
That sounds good. I mean, initially, it seems like it's pretty nice. There, like I said, there seem to be a few more ports in the back. There is gigabit Ethernet, which is exciting, or excuse me, 10 gigabit Ethernet. The TS4 had 2.5 gigabit Ethernet. That being said, I did a quick iPerf 3 speed test between the Synology and my Mac, and it was not as impressive as I would have hoped, but I wouldn't be surprised if I have old wires between, you know, me and my Switch. Oh, actually, and I might not even be on, no, I think I am on a 10 gigabit port on the Switch, but nevertheless, I have some playing to do, but I didn't have time before the recording. But yeah, initial results are this extraordinarily overpriced, well, maybe not overpriced, extraordinarily expensive, costly, is that the Merlinism? This extraordinarily costly CalDigit dock is very nice. And I might be reselling my TS4 to a local friend, but if not, and you're interested in one, feel free to reach out.
So have you considered the possibility that the Synology hard drives can't actually serve 1.2 gigabytes per second?
I have. And that's a very, very good point. I don't think I have anything else that's 10 gigabit at the moment, though. Like my Mac Mini is an M1 Mac Mini. It has just straight up gigabit, 1 gigabit Ethernet. I guess I could. I'm struggling to theorize a way I could do this test any better. And I agree with you that the hard drives may be the issue here, not the Synology.
Yeah, like if you put like some kind of, I mean, I'm sure there's some Synology app that basically is like, you know, a network performance thing where it just sends data, you know, from nothing over the internet or over the network.
And you can just do that with a shell script yourself if you want.
Yeah,
I thought iPerf 3 did that, but I don't know enough about it to know one way or the other. So I am talking outside my comfort zone at this point. But yeah, I got to fiddle with it. And again, it could be any one of several different things. It could be the hard drives are too slow. They're like 7,200 RPM hard drives.
If you're doing sequential reads from a giant media file with all, especially in the initial speed when you do it a couple times and it gets into like the caches and everything, I think you should be fine. I think you should be able to.
I don't know. I mean, you're talking about, again, 1.2 gigabytes per second being read off of a collection of ancient hard drives that are in some kind of RAID arrangement. And, you know, any RAID that does not include, you know, a 1 and a 0 is slow. Very, very slow. And so it would not surprise me if actually all of these, like, you know, old, presumably SATA-connected hard drives can't actually deliver 1.2 gigabytes of streaming data over the network.
Yeah, I forgot that you don't have any RAID. You know, even your backups aren't RAID 0. I think we've talked about this before.
They used to be in the 8-bay Synology, but I don't think I'm even doing Time Machine. Or if I am, that's what it was. I'm doing a single standalone hard drive, if I recall correctly, as Time Machine. And so there's no redundancy or striping or splitting of any sort.
Oh, well.
So yeah, this is breaking news. You know, I have testing to do. This could be cabling. It could be the fact that my tests are flawed because of what I'm testing against. There are so many different issues here, many of which start and end with me. So story of my life for sure. So yeah, so I'm not clear what the weak link is, but it's probably me. But yeah, I mean, the chat room is justifiably and surprised and thankfully not in a rude way saying, well, why bother go from 4 to 5? I don't have a good reason. This was a little bit of a Marco purchase, especially since it is $500. It is a lot of money. But the good news is I'd already spent money on a plane ticket to WWDC that I ended up getting refunded. So I had a credit on my credit card. So that makes
I'm
it free,
sure that's
right?
How money works. But mm-hmm. Okay.
No, that's exactly how money works. Yeah, come on, Marco.
That's
defend
like
me here.
Business write-offs. They're just free, right?
Either way, I really wanted 10 gigabit Ethernet so that, you know, I can go between the Synology and me faster than I was before. And rather than getting a bespoke 10 gigabit Ethernet, I was going to say card, but I guess thing. I can't think of the word I'm looking for. Anyway, so
dongle, switch.
Dongle adapter, thank you, etc. I just upgraded the CalDigit. And it is worth noting that I'm using this, and this could also be another part of the problem. I'm using this on an M3 Max MacBook Pro, which is Thunderbolt 4, and everything is working, but there is not as much bandwidth as it would have if I had
it's fine. That's 40 gigabits.
I would think as well, but also I have two different 5K monitors connected to it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So many of these problems could be me. I think what I'm already hearing, though, Marco, I hope you picked up what I was just putting down. The only solution to this problem, the clear answer to this problem, is to upgrade my MacBook Pro when the M5 comes out. That's the only answer, right, Marco? Because I need the Thunderbolt 5, actually.
You can get a Mac Pro, so you can hook up the two 5K monitors to the Mac and not worry about it taking your bandwidth. It's got a dedicated 10 gig Ethernet
there
port.
There
you
go.
You know?
Yeah, perfect.
Someday when they release a good Mac Pro.
I mean, you also get a Mac Mini that has 10 gig Ethernet.
That's very true, exactly. But anyways, but yeah, so far, two thumbs up if you're willing to spend an extraordinary amount of money on something that, in my case, is marginally frivolous. But hey, here's what we're going to do. I put an affiliate link in the show notes, so all of you can buy one, and then I'll get like $1 from each of you. And if enough of you buy it, I'll be rich.
So after that's this amazing review, you spent $500 to sort of maybe increase something a little bit.
That's exactly right. I do have more ports. It really
future-proofing.
More
future-proofing.
And
he
it
won't
is
need to buy. He won't need to buy the six.
It's like $100 per port, though.
Stop it, Marco. You're supposed to be on my side, remember? You're getting this all wrong. Oh, my goodness. All right. Anyways, let's do some follow-up. And last episode, John and I did a review of F1, the movie that stars Brad Pitt. We talked about that in the, I believe, the post show and a little bit in the bootleg as well, or overtime or something. I forget exactly where it was.
It was the bootleg. A couple people asked about that, but as I said, I was going to talk about spoiler stuff. We didn't do it in overtime. I did it in the bootleg. So there you go. If you want to get all the bits, the bootleg has
all
everything.
All the bits.
I believe it's pronounced bootleg.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes. But anyways, one of the things I forgot to bring up last episode was Apple's rumored F1 deal. So let me set the stage. With Formula One, ESPN, which is a sports network that's based here in America, and pretty much every cable package includes it, or most cable packages include it. They are the carrier of F1 in the States. However, they just basically regurgitate, I believe it's Sky Sports from the UK. So they take the UK feed and just blast it out through ESPN. And that's been the case since I've been paying attention to F1 for like 5 years now. Well, reading from, I think this is Mac Rumors, forgive me, I don't have it in front of me. Yes, Mac Rumors. Apple is expected to win the rights to stream Formula One races on Apple TV Plus in the United States thanks to a $150 million bid, Business Insider reports. The rights to broadcast Formula One in the United States are currently held by Disney's ESPN. According to sources familiar with negotiations, Disney is apparently unwilling to match or beat Apple's offer. It pays, Disney that is, pays around $85 million per year for its current rights, just over half of Apple's latest bid. I think this is really interesting and really exciting. I, as someone who's already committed to Apple TV Plus, I think this is great. If I wasn't committed to Apple TV Plus, I would be very grumbly because that's another subscription I would potentially need to do. But it is worth noting a couple of things. First of all, I pay for and subscribe to F1 TV. which is Formula One's own streaming service, which has always been pretty good, but has gotten really good in this season. What makes it really special now is that when you're watching on like the Apple TV, for example, you can not only have the main race feed, but you can additionally have like two or three other feeds. So you can have like the race feed and then your favorite driver and someone who's, you know, your favorite driver's enemy or something like that off to the side. Is not literally picture in picture, but, you know, kind of an accessory screen, or like Jason Snell's multi-view that he's always talking about and so on. And so that's really great. And that's, I think, $80 a year, if I recall correctly, or a season for the standard version. It's like $120 for the fancy version I was just talking about, where you get the multi-view. And also for the six of you that happen to be Vision Pro owners, Vroom is an incredible app that I don't think is available anymore. It was only ever available via test flight, but you could hook up your F1 TV credentials and log into that and get like an in-space multi-view. So imagine what I was just describing, but more little rectangles, and all over the place. You could get a 3D view of the track and where the cars are in the track. It is phenomenal. I'll put a link in the show notes to a Reddit post that does a really good job of showing a like video of how this works. It's really, really great. And that worked via F1 TV. And then finally, last episode, I spoke about a immersive Vision Pro thing where you got to ride along with Brad Pitt. And again, immersive means you can twist your head and you'll get a different view and so on and so forth. And I conflated that, I think, in the last episode with John's video, which, John, what you remind me what you had brought to the table.
It was Brad Pitt getting to drive a real F1 car by himself. In a non-movie capacity as the actual just person Brad Pitt, and it was on YouTube. I think it was released around the time the F1 movie was released, so it's not it's pretty new, or at least it's newly posted to YouTube, so I didn't know that it wasn't the same thing as you were describing, but I had just seen it recently.
Yeah, and I have since watched that because I don't know how I missed it, but I didn't know it was a thing. It's like 20-30 minutes, and if you're into Brad Pitt or F1 or anything like that, I freaking loved it. I thought it was delightful. We will put the link in this show notes. And then the immersive ride-along thing, unfortunately, there's no direct link to that immersive video, but I'll put a link in the show notes to something that, if you have your Vision Pro on, if you scroll down on what I link to, you can find it there, but I can't link you directly to that video.
Apple hasn't discovered how links work yet. They'll figure it out eventually.
No comment.
Do you All right, think John, there's anybody listening to this right now who is currently, as they're listening, wearing a Vision Pro?
No.
But I think there are people listening who own one.
Yes, definitely. And the immersive thing is all of like 5 minutes, but it's delightful. It's really, really cool. And it gives you a real kind of feel for what it's like to be in an F1 car. It's really great. John, is your toaster still really great? Because what I have in our internal show notes is John's toaster update, and I'm nervous.
Uh-oh.
I think it was last episode where I talked about my toaster that I got as a gag gift in 2011 at WWDC. That turned out to be an amazingly good toaster that I kept for 14 years that just started going a little wonky, so I replaced it with the same model of toaster that had a couple of improvements. Well, since then, there have been developments. Well, first is I did actually try to buy a spare part to fix the old toaster, only after removing 8,000 screws that hold my old toaster together and getting at the part, and I was about to remove it, I realized, oh, the replacement part that I bought to replace it with is not exactly the same. The little connector is different. I guess I could have cut the wires and spliced it together, but they seem to have like heat resistant shielding on it. And I was like, nope, not going to do that. Not going to try to splice wires inside the toaster. So I just put the 8,000 screws back in and put it back together. So that was a bummer. But anyway, the real update is that my brand new toaster, when I was in the kitchen, I think I was cooking something on the stovetop, but I wasn't using the toaster. No one had used the toaster for hours. Suddenly, the new toaster started going beep, 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 beep. At first, I didn't know where the heck the beeping was come from. It didn't sound like a smoke alarm beeping. It was just like a computery beeping noise. I'm like, what? I don't have any... What in the kitchen could possibly be making that noise? And then I looked over the toaster because the screen had come on. And on the screen were the letters E01.
Oh, no.
That's not good.
So I looked that up in the manual. And in the manual for my toaster, it says the LCD screen will display E01 when there is a non-resettable issue with this appliance. Should this occur, immediately remove the power cord from the wall outlet and call Breville customer service. So it did. Actually, they were closed. I had to wait the next day. So I did unplug the toaster, and then I called Breville customer service the next day. I was trying to navigate the phone tree, and I'm on hold, you know, as you are. I was calling on my iPhone. And it said, by the way, if you don't want to wait and listen to this hold music, you can press one and we'll give you a call back. I'm like, yes, total. I totally want to do that. So I brought up the keypad and I pressed one. It didn't work. And I tried it like 9 times. It said, you know,
oh, no.
Press one if you want to call back. And I pressed one. It didn't work. So I gave up, hung up, called on my landline phone, pressed one there. It worked fine. Eventually, I got 2 callbacks from them. But anyway, their system was a little wonky. They did call me back, which was nice. And I said, hey, it showed E01. And I always forget about that. I've talked about it multiple times in the show, but every time it happens to me, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the age we live in. Do you remember when I had, like, the wonky Microsoft mouse and I said they wanted me to, like, send a video of it being
broken?
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We're in the age where all customer service people know that you probably have a way to take pictures and video immediately and send it to them. And so they're like, why should I waste my time believing what people say on the phone like we used to in the old days when I can ask them to prove it with... you know, with cameras and video. So this time they had, like, they SMS'd me a link to a web page that asked to use the camera to, like, they wanted, like, live video of it. And here's the thing. I knew because I had unplugged it. Well, first thing I did is I unplugged it and plugged it back in, and E01 was still there. Then I unplugged it, left it unplugged for, like, an hour and plugged it back in, and E01 was gone. And everything seemed to work fine. But I'm like, well, whatever. I'm just going to leave this thing unplugged. So I knew what the deal was. But I'm like, well, if you want to see video, all you're going to see is me plug the toaster in, and it's going to appear to work fine. And so sure enough, I did. I videoed. I plugged the toaster in. At this point, it had been unplugged overnight. I plugged the toaster in. It appeared to work fine. She had me do a bunch of test things. And yep, see, it seems to work fine. And basically, the only reason I was calling is like, look, the manual says unplug it immediately and call customer service. So that's what I did. So I was like, why does it say that? Is it going to catch fire or whatever? And she's like, well, if it seems like it's working fine now, it should be fine. No, it won't catch fire, blah, blah, blah. So if I die because my toaster burns my house down, send them this podcast. Because they told me, and I asked repeatedly, so is it okay for me to keep using this toaster now? Like, yep, totally fine. Plug it back in. Seems like it's working fine. You can plug it back in. It's all good. If you see the error again, you can call us back. So this, and I haven't seen the error again. We use the toaster all the time, multiple times a day, and it's been fine so far. But anyway, this toaster is on notice, and I still have the old one in the attic that has been unscrewed once and put back together. I don't know what the deal is. They're, you know, again, if you Google for this, lots of people have this E01 and various theories about what it might or might not be. But I haven't seen it since, but I'm keeping my eye on it. And then, by the way, I got, you know, I said I press one for the callback. Eventually, the iPhone callback thing worked too. Like, I pressed one and it said that they would call back. So I got 2 callbacks. One of them I did the whole rigmarole with. The other one, I just said, someone else already called me back and I got my issue sorted out. Then today, they called me again and said, hey, just checking in. Were they checking to see if my house had burned down? I don't know. Just checking in to make sure you don't have any problems. Like, nope, problem has to... So mixed review for Breville customer service. They actually call you back, which is not always true of Apple, by the way, because I've done the callback thing on Apple and not gotten a call back many times in my life. I have gotten the callbacks many times in my life as well. But anyway, Breville is, you know, 100% on, they will call you back. And I didn't even know they were going to call again and say, just check in and everything's fine. So there you have it. My new replacement toaster. Not sure what the deal is. Maybe it was just nervous about being in a new house, but we'll see.
Yeah, I had to do that customer support video link thing on my phone too. My Fios went out and I had to call Verizon. And the thing with Verizon is Verizon Fios, you know, that's their name for their fiber optic ISP to your home. Verizon Fios is amazing once you get it working and once it's hooked up. You never have to interact with Verizon unless something breaks. And in this case, it only broke after, you know, 6 continuous years of service, which, okay, not too bad. However, when you do have to contact Verizon, it's terrible. Like, Verizon has possibly the worst customer service I've dealt with in a very long time in terms of just, like,
Xfinity has entered the chat, sir.
Okay, fortunately.
it's a real race to the bottom between those two titans.
Yeah, yep. Like, you know, talk about, like, you know, unhelpful people, very, very long hold times, like 2-hour hold times, like very long hold times.
Trying to upsell you at completely inappropriate times.
Oh my God. Oh, totally. But they also did the same thing. It's probably using the same service where, like, you know, they texted me a link, just like John was saying, they texted me a link to this web app that used the camera to stream video live to them, which I kind of, like, I kind of felt a little bit uneasy about that, to be honest. I'm like, if I knew that you were going to make me stream video to you as I, like, you know, walk through my house to show you the router and the utility closet and everything, I'm like, maybe I would have like cleaned up the house a little. I don't know. Like it felt very invasive.
I don't mind the invasiveness of it, and I'm not against it. I think it does actually. Like, let's cut to the chase here. We have the technology. We should use it. It just surprises me every time. Like the, especially in cases where if I just say like my thing showed easier or what. Like they used to before they had the ability to do this, they would just believe what you said, which obviously is a downside.
No, they
people
wouldn't
would lie to them. But it also saved time if you're telling the truth, and I'm telling the truth about what happened. But anyway, like in cases like Fios things, I think I would probably find it helpful. But I have lied to Fios in the past, back when they used to be real angry if you weren't using their equipment, and I never used their equipment, you know, like their router or anything.
Oh, yeah.
But these days, they're way more chill about that.
Yeah, and in this case, too, like, I was going into the back of a Ubiquiti, the original Ubiquiti Dream router, like the, like, cylinder-shaped one, which, on its Ethernet ports in the back, they don't have link lights on them. They're, like, there's no lights on the ports, because it was a pretty inexpensive model. And so I was running into that. And so they kept saying, like, oh, now go show me the back of your router. And I'm like, well, here. But what they were looking for was link light. I'm like, but it doesn't have link lights. Like, I'm telling you, like, and they trying to get them to accept that was a little challenging. And, of course, you know, at the end of the day, like, I was on with them for hours, and they didn't fix the problem and, you know, had to send somebody out. It was a whole thing. But anyway, the whole, like, you know, show us a video thing, I can see why they do that. And I can see why it might work well in a lot of cases, but I just it feels a little bit skeevy to me. I don't know.
There's totally some giant cache of the inside of everyone's houses recorded on some website that's insecure. Like the same way that like people are getting access to the accidental like Siri activations and stuff. This is absolutely happening with all those apps, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I haven't had to do this in a long time, thankfully, as I knock on wood. But I know that my time will come. And I mean, because we moved to this house in 2008, so it's been almost 20 years. And I think I've spoken to Verizon Fios customer service twice, maybe
yeah, like,
thrice.
Once
maybe?
You get it working, you never have to deal with them, which is good, because yeah. Dealing with them is the worst.
Well, I mean, so the in-house stuff is great, but like, for example, if a tree falls two blocks over and, you know, breaks the fiber optic cable running to your house, you would think that's like, well, they know about that, right? They'll fix it. I don't have to call. You probably have to call. And going like trying to convince them or convince yourself that it really is the tree that fell and broke the wire, like that's the problem, not, oh, you changed something in your house, you know, or your router's broken or whatever, like, oh, you're not using the Fios router. It's like, I swear it's the tree. Like, literally, things are broken and on the ground. Send a truck.
I promise. Yay. All right, well, I have my own update. I am the happy recipient of refreshed, refurbished, replaced, repaired AirPods. So where we last left our hero, I had gone to the Apple store. I don't remember what day it was. I guess it was like Tuesday last week. And I had said, hey, you know, my right I keep trying to call it earbud and AirPod all at the same time. I can only say but one word at once.
I mean,
bear
you're
with
not
me,
the
everyone.
Only person who has ever jumbled these names up. Like this
exactly.
is everyone I've ever heard talk about these products.
It's so
just
true.
Just say iTouch.
Yeah, my right eye touch. My
oh,
right eye touch was failing. So I went to the Apple store and explained, oh, you know, a listener was very kind to I didn't say a listener, but, you know, I said a friend had been very kind to send me a replacement charging case, and that doesn't seem to be working. What do I do? And he said, all right, well, we're going to put it back in the original case that it came with, because it turns out past Casey had optioned AppleCare on it, and we're going to send both AirPods, whatever they're called, peasy.
AirPod is the basketball playing dog.
Yeah, right. My bad. A great layup on that one. Anyways, we're going to send all them up to Apple, which, as it turns out, is in Louisville, where all these repair places are, and we'll see what happens. And so I forget when it was specifically, but I think it was like late last week at like 10:30 at night, I got an email saying, hey, we have results. Here's what we found. And let me repeat to you that the right pod was the one that was not able to charge, was dead as a doornail. The case seemed fine. The left pod seemed fine. So they said, okay, here's what we found. There's water damage in the case, water damage in the left pod, water damage in the right pod. That'll be $30, please. And for a minute, I was like, what? No, there's
right,
no water
sense.
Damage.
Like you work out in them, right?
I do. It's not terribly often, but I do. And I think there is a strong possibility that I had dropped one of, like, the right one in water at some point, which I didn't think about.
Wait, wait, wait. This seems like something you would remember. I agree.
I
think you might have dropped them in water?
I think it is possible.
This is material information to the case.
Well, how can you, like, do they go into glasses of water so frequently that you can't remember? That would be a notable event in my life if I drop my AirPods into a thing of water. Do you mean, like, you drop them onto, like, a little puddle on the counter?
No, like I can imagine. I can't. See, here's the thing. Oh, my own memory, my own confidence in my own memory is so bad that I have a vague recollection of perhaps one of them, I think the right one, hopping into the sink, perhaps when I was taking my contacts out and cleaning them and whatnot, so there was standing water in the sink. Mm-mm. And grabbing it immediately, but I mean, hey,
water damage. You're like, you had plugged the sink?
Yeah, because I wear hard... We're really going down the rabbit hole now. All right, so I wear hard contact lenses because I have a weird issue called keratoconus. And keratoconus means my eyeballs, not literally, but figuratively speaking, are shaped like American footballs. And so hard contact lenses puts a nice, regularly rounded surface in front of my eyes. And so that's how I can see. And when I have my contacts in, I have pretty good vision. Not great, but pretty good vision. And if I take my hard contacts out, I'm freaking blind. And so that means because they're hard contacts, they're not disposable, like everyone thinks of when they hear contact lenses. So I have to clean them every single night. And in that process, I plug the sink because it has happened many years ago that I've whiffed as I'm like rinsing them or whatever, and down the drain they go, and I'm out $300.
You're plugging it to stop something from going down the drain, but do you then fill the sink with water?
No, it's just as in the process of rinsing them.
Got it. The
sink will fill with water.
So maybe like one fell out of your ear into the sink. Right. Maybe it was like a half an inch of water in the bottom of it. You yanked out real fast.
Exactly. But I mean, hey, water is water. Damage is damage.
Honestly, it doesn't matter. This is another one of the things you get when you pay for AppleCare. In fact, people wrote in to say this. Maybe it's in part of the things you put in here. But like, people send them through the wash all the time. Like, they're in my pocket. I sent my pants through the wash with my AirPods in them. You got AppleCare Plus, that'll be $30, new AirPods.
Yep, exactly. So they said, oh, there's all this water damage. And of course, not dissimilar from my initial reaction to the movie database starting to bill me. I was like, what? No, that's not true. That's not right. And then I thought for a beat, and I was like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll pay the $30. What am I arguing with this
for? And honestly, like, it's those water sensors, like, this is not a waterproof device. It's not a water-resistant device. It's not anything. And it's got holes in it. And, like, I can imagine just ear sweat being responsible for water damage in a lot of AirPods. So that's another reason to potentially get AppleCare on them if you know you're going to sweat and kill them eventually.
Right. So
I think there is some water resistance to them. I think it's just not a ton.
Yeah. So one way or another, I paid my $30 pretty much immediately. I think it was Thursday or Friday. I can't recall that they said, okay, we'll ship. I think it was Thursday night. They ended up shipping on Friday, if I recall correctly. And actually, surprisingly early for UPS, they arrived at my door today. The other funny thing was when I was with the Genius, who, again, was very kind and very helpful, the Genius was like, hey, we can ship this to your house if you want, but you're going to have to be there to sign for it. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. You're gonna have to be there to sign for it. Like, this is clearly a man who has been through some stuff with angry customers in the past, right? And I was like, no, it's fine. I work from home. It should be fine. And sure enough, the UPS came and dropped it on my front stoop and walked away. I'm not mad at him, having erred on the side of caution, but I thought that quite funny because he made a stink about the fact that I needed to sign for it. But anyways, I was hoping against all logic that maybe they would give me not only, two new AirPods, two new iTouches,
two new iPods.
Maybe I would get a USB-C case. A USB-C case that, to be completely clear, I in no way deserved. I was going to say no reasonable way. I straight up did not deserve a USB-C case, but I was hoping. I did not receive a USB-C case, which I'm
You'll get one when you buy your AirPods 3.
I know.
Yeah, the era of Apple like giving you little upgrades for service, like that was occasionally the case 15, 20 years ago.
They'll still do it if they can't get the old one.
Yeah, but they Apple maintains a very strong supply chain now. So like that era is in the past.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't expect it. I did not deserve it, but I was hoping. And so that didn't happen. So all told, this experience on the whole was good. $30 later, plus whatever the cost of the initial AppleCare was, which I truly do not remember, I have what is effectively a brand new set of AirPods. Like, maybe they were repaired rather than replaced, but it looks to me like it was, a refurb or whatever. So on the whole, not bad. I feel like my in-store experience was not great, not in the sense that, you know, the Genius was bad. Again, the Genius was great. Just that I kind of wish they would have just given me a new set or whatever, a refurb set, and let me walk out. And I have news about that. Before we get to that, though, a real-time follow-up. Someone in the chat, long form in the chat, has found footnote number 9 on the AirPods Pro 2 specs page. AirPods Pro 2 are dust, sweat, and water-resistant for non-water sports and exercise. Products, including charging case, were tested under controlled laboratory conditions and have a rating of IP54. Dust, sweat, and water resistance are not permanent conditions, and resistance might decrease as a result of normal wear. Blah, blah, blah. So I think, Marco, you just said a moment ago, to a degree, they are at least resistant, and that sounds accurate.
Yeah, they're made to tolerate, and, like, you know, workout sweat, and maybe occasionally get, you know, if you're jogging and it's raining, you know, stuff like that. Like, they're made to tolerate that, not immersion.
Right. All right, so now feedback with regard to how I should have handled this. And I got a few different pieces of feedback, which I thought were really great. Andrew on Things writes, I ran into the same send them in requirement in store, but it wasn't a dire issue, so I held off for a bit to think about it. I called a few days later, and Apple offered to ship me new ones immediately, as long as I agreed to a temporary hold of my credit card until I sent mine back. Why this is not offered in store is beyond me. I get why they may not want to do that in store, but this was the way I should have handled it. Mark W. writes, to get my AirPods repaired, I hopped on the Apple support website, spoke to someone in chat. Okay, quick aside from Casey now. Hi, this is Casey. I looked for some mechanism by which to chat. Again, like we were talking about in the pre-show, probably user error. For the life of me, I couldn't find it, and that's why I decided I'll just go to the store, because I thought, I bet you I could do something about this via chat. I couldn't find it. Maybe it's plain as day, and I just did not see it.
It's hard to find. I've stumbled upon it a few times, but I couldn't find it if you asked me to do it right now. But it's there somewhere.
All right. Well, that makes me feel a little bit better. So anyway, back to Mark. Blah, blah, blah. I spoke to someone in chat, answered a few questions, and then just asked them for advanced replacement. And we'll put a link. A listener, Vortex, actually found the link that's specific to AirPods advanced replacement, and we'll put that in the show notes. So anyway, back to Mark. Just asked them for advanced replacement, and they set it up for me. You pay some nominal fee up front, and they ship a replacement AirPod to you the next day with a return box, and then the money is refunded when they receive your faulty unit back. I've used the advanced replacement service many times over multiple sets of products, and it's the main reason I keep buying AppleCare, because it means I never had to be without headphones. Let me tell you, this is the first worldiest of first world problems, but I went, you know, half a week or a week without my AirPods. I knew I used my AirPods all the time. I knew they made my life and my personal opinion much better. I didn't realize how awful life was without my AirPods. Again, I'm being a bit hyperbolic, but holy jamolies, it was genuinely burdensome not to have my AirPods, and it was such a relief when they came back in today. So yes, this is advanced replacement, or perhaps express replacement service. And again, we'll put a link in the show notes. Express replacement service is a benefit of AppleCare Plus for AirPods. With express replacement service, we'll ship you a replacement device so you don't have to wait for repair. And this service it exists for other device classes as well, not just AirPods. The link we'll put in the show notes is explicitly for AirPods, but we'll put a link, or you can find equivalent links for other things. So anyway, Anonymous writes, there are two aspects of your story that I noticed factoring into the reason why dead and untroubleshootable AirPods need to be serviced off-site: counterfeit products and AppleCare Plus coverage. About a year or two after AirPods launched, my coworkers and I noticed a lot of fake AirPods coming in. Sure, the first few waves of them were easy to spot. The size or color was off, the case looked janky, and they generally had no serial number to identify them. Then the knockoffs got better, and soon they were in real cases with real warranty coverage. The fake but convincing AirPods won't turn on, and the next service step would be a replacement. After a while, we got more tools to identify individual AirPods, which now had individual serial numbers as well. All this to curb a cycle in which fake AirPods could be laundered into genuine working AirPods. So to conclude, no part serial does not mean no new AirPods, and thus off to the depot they go. AppleCare Plus extends the quote-unquote usefulness of a serialized case in this chain by a year. It also wouldn't be uncommon for us to see other fake Apple devices at the Genius Bar carrying real serial numbers, often with AppleCare Plus coverage attached. This blew my mind. I should have expected it. Blew my mind. And so that made me feel a little bit better about the fact that when this thing is freaking dead, and presumably they can't interrogate this AirPod to see what its serial number is, okay, maybe I am trying to pass.
But even if they can, because apparently the fakes carry legitimate serial numbers, and they don't have a way to tell whether this is the actual one that we sold with the serial number or a fake one. So I guess maybe when they send it away, they have other ways to tell whether they're legitimate, like X-raying the inside of them or something or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, dealing with counterfeits is an ongoing problem for Apple.
Yeah, and yep. I think we don't fully appreciate, like, you know, in most nerd circles, like, the extent to which they are, you know, that people try to defraud them and you know, for a profit. And this isn't, you know, this isn't just like, you know, somebody, you know, an individual trying to, like, you know, return used AirPods to get new ones. This is like large scale operations, especially in China, yep. You know, where like the black market and like organized crime is involved. It's a really huge thing of like basically defrauding Apple out of, you know, trading in counterfeit copies of their devices that say they don't work to get real ones and then sell them for a profit. It's a big thing. And basically as a result of that, that's oftentimes what is behind when Apple like further locks down parts pairing and repairs and Apple Care coverage and everything. It's often to counteract whatever the latest techniques are of these people who defraud them. And so it's a whole huge cat and mouse game, most of which we aren't really aware of and don't really see, but it's going on. And so I think the problem with all of this, though, is that the result is Apple Care is just going to get worse for Apple's legitimate customers. And that's not – it's a crappy problem. I don't – like it's not – there's not really an obvious good solution to it, except that – you think you could just walk in and trade stuff in and get them replaced in person in the stores, and that's going to, you know, be slowly eroded over time as all of these, you know, basically scam and fraud defenses have to keep going up.
Yeah, bad people ruin stuff for everybody. I mean, but the express replacement is good because they'll still catch the fraud, presumably, because you do have to send it back and they have put a hold on your credit card. So if you send in fake ones to, you know, to someplace where they can check that they're fake, you're just not going to get your money back. So it stops the counterfeiting, presumably, but also it helps you not be without AirPods for as long as Casey was. So I guess that's the best workaround we have for this unfortunate situation.
See, made fun of me for my initial solution of my AirPods don't last as long as a plane ride. I just bought a second pair. I am so happy that I keep two pairs of AirPods because now, like, you know, it's like if the battery is dead because I've forgotten to charge it for a while. No problem. I'll just take out the other pair. Like, it's fine. If I accidentally leave one at the house and I'm out somewhere and I have my backpack with me, I have the other pair. No problem.
I was wondering why Casey doesn't have a house full of old AirPods like I do.
Well, I have. So my AirPods Mark One, if you will, I had given to Erin, and she almost never uses them. And I did that, you know, married person thing where I was like, hey, it's really stinky. I don't have my AirPods right now, hoping that she would say, oh, yeah, you could just take mine back for a little while. But that seemed a bit aggressive, even though she almost never uses them. Like, I should be a grown ass man who can last 5 days without my beloved AirPods. And I did, but only just.
I would.
But I mean, I could have gone to the attic and dug up some of my like OG AirPods that probably would have lasted 10 minutes at a time. But that would have been better than nothing. But it just didn't seem worth the effort, especially because the attic is a trillion degrees right now. And then finally, on the AirPods topic, a different anonymous person writes, it's not uncommon for my store to run into 5 sets or more of fake AirPods per day that we visually identify. It's unknown to me how many we send out that are later found to be non-genuine products. So here's the thing. Like, this is what Marco was saying a moment ago. Like, I don't want to really crack into the right to repair discussion because we've been through it. It's not useful right now. But if you look at it from Apple's perspective, a lot of the stuff that they do that gets iFixit upset, I understand. This is Marco's point. I understand why and how they got there. That doesn't make it right. But I get how they got there. And this is a very tricky problem to solve. And I had no idea how bad it was. And this anonymous person said they were in a metro area, but they didn't specify specifically where. But it sounded to me like it was a roughly Richmond-sized metro area. It was not like a Manhattan or anything like that. So I didn't realize how prevalent this was and how widespread.
I bet most of those people don't know they have fake AirPods. You know what I mean?
That's also very possible.
Like, they just bought them online and they found a good deal on AirPods and they had no idea they were being sold counterfeit goods, and also they don't work and they bring them in. That's got to be the common case.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so, like, back in the day, I don't know how much this is still the case, but back in the day, SD cards were very commonly counterfeited. And so I once unknowingly bought a counterfeit one on Amazon, like a counterfeit SanDisk SD card, right from Amazon, you know, ships from and sold from Amazon.com, like everything. And so I from that point forward, I was very careful to only ever buy SD cards from B&H. Because I know, you know, they are also a very good, high-quality retailer, and they're very strict with their supply chain. Whereas Amazon, is not strict with their supply chain at all. And so you don't really know necessarily what you're getting on Amazon. And I still buy everything else on Amazon, really. But, like, you know, the stuff where that kind of thing matters a lot and where they're highly counterfeited, I buy from more authoritative sources like B&H. I think now that Apple's products are that highly counterfeited, it's probably best for, especially something like AirPods that apparently are very easy to counterfeit, I think it's even more important than ever to buy Apple's products of those types from Apple.
That's, I agree with you on paper, but have you seen the deals running on AirPods Pro 2? I think right now, actually, on Amazon,
well,
they're like
they AirPods
80 bucks
Pros
off.
Too?
I mean, fair, but they're like absurdly discounted. So again, doesn't make you wrong, but oof, if it were me, it'd be hard to pass that up. Anyway, so yeah, so in summary, 30 bucks later, I have effectively new AirPods, which is great for today, but future Casey's going to be real mad when those AirPods Pro 3 come out. And I really want to upgrade, and I look at my like 2-month-old AirPods Pros 2.
They're going to be your backups then.
Yeah,
that's when you true. Drop the 3s in the sink.
Yeah, exactly. All right, tell me, John, about tabs in Tahoe, please.
This is something I mentioned on the last episode, that there was a way to set a property list entry somewhere to revert the weird capsule-shaped tabs in Tahoe to be more normal-looking tabs. And I couldn't remember if it was like a global one or app-specific or whatever. But anyway, Steve Stroughton Smith pointed me to the tweet of his that I was remembering. It is global. It's defaults right minus G, which is the global specifier. The key is NS Solarium window tabs, and then you set it to a Boolean value of false, and it won't use the capsule-shaped tabs. Steve says it sets it at the app kit level, so it should affect all apps using the system tabs, but Safari does not use the system tabs, so it won't affect Safari, and that was thus the confusion about whether it was global. I just tried it in Terminal, and so the tabs look more normal, but everything is still like extremely bright white, so it doesn't change the UI back to Sequoia or anything. But if you want to try that out, for as long as that option lasts, have fun. And I think the Tahoe public beta is coming soon. I think it was accidentally released to some people already, so you could at least probably try it in the public beta if it's still there.
Yeah, probably tomorrow, I would guess.
All right, low-cost Apple laptops with A18 Pros. Mandanam writes, this would not be the first A-series chip in a Mac, as there was... Oh, I forgot to bring this up. This pissed me off so much because I thought about this when we were recording, and then it completely slipped my mind to say something because we got sidetracked on talking about something else, and then I meant to circle back and never did. So anyway, Mandanam writes, this would not be the first time the first A-series chip in a Mac, as there was the Apple Silicon Developer Transition Kit, which used the A12Z from the iPad Pro. It's a good call.
I mean, yep. Technically, was that a Mac?
Yeah, I mean...
Fair.
Yes. I mean, you couldn't do a ton with it, but it was a Mac.
I mean, it ran Mac OS, but it was called the Apple Developer Transition Kit, wasn't it? I don't remember if it had a Mac.
I believe
but
right.
Anyway, yes, obviously, yeah. Yes, there have been... you could run Mac... It's better to say you could run Mac OS on A-series chips before, but to call this a Mac, obviously it's not a Mac that people could buy in the general public, and we had to send them all back to Apple, so you didn't even get to keep them. We leased it for a little while.
So we're saying it's not a Mac, but is it a robot? Or not.
Yeah. Anyway, but it's worth noting that that was the A12Z, which was way slower than the A18, and it was fine.
Yeah. Many different people had a few different things to write or to add. Perhaps the shell would be plastic instead of aluminum. I don't think that's probable, but it is certainly possible.
People have fond memories of the plastic iBooks, especially the toilet seat ones that came in fun colors. So I think there's a lot of nostalgia for that. Apple could tap into that nostalgia and make a really good plastic MacBook, but plastic is not as good a conductor of heat as aluminum. And with today's thin and light laptops, I think a plastic one doesn't have the strength or the heat conductivity to be an option. So I'm thinking that's not particularly likely, but people really did love those colorful ones. So keep hope alive, I guess.
I mean, honestly, I think when people are hoping for a plastic MacBook, they're not thinking about the iBooks. They're thinking about the plastic MacBooks, the Intel ones from 2006 through
9-ish. Yeah, well, there was the IceBook, too, like the white one. There was a whole bunch of plastic ones, not just the toilet seat.
Yeah, but like so right at the end of the plastic era, so, you know, when we think fondly of the plastic MacBooks, what we are thinking of is those very first-gen Intel ones from 2006 and 8, you know, and, you know, the ones where, like, the handrest would, like, get cracked or would yellow or things like that. Well, at the very end, they still, I think it was like 2010, it was surprisingly late, they made a unibody-ish looking plastic one. It was like the cheap MacBook, you know, product that, you know, for businesses and education for like a year or two. And it was a different white plastic case. It was, I believe, like basically one piece or, you know, very few pieces. And
oh, yeah, they did like a unibody plastic or something close to that. Yeah.
And it didn't have any of the problems that the earlier plastic ones did. It was just like it was the cheap one. And by that point, everybody else was like the entire rest of the line was using these cool metal ones and nobody really cared about those anymore. But they could do something like that. So I think I wouldn't worry about heat because as we learned, there are like, you know, basically like safety requirements in most countries where they can't just bond the processor to the metal body of the laptop because it gets too hot and you can't have that on somebody's lap or touching somebody's skin.
But so, that's why aluminum is good because it lets the heat spread and not concentrate in one place.
Well, but so their usual approach to heat management is like they don't just stick the processor bonded heat-wise somehow to the case. They have a heat sink on the processor and a fan blows air over it and then there's vents on the outside.
Oh, these are surely to be fanless, right? They just think
presumably. Because,
Mac,
you know,
is going to be fanless?
Yeah, because you know, if you look at like the low-end, you know, the MacBook Air is fanless and that uses, you know, the M4 or whatever. But the way they do that is with an air gap. Like they basically heat up the cavity inside inside of it and, you know, and hope it cools a little bit by convection. But the iPhone chip uses way less peak power than the M4. So it's definitely going to be fanless, but I think they could do a similar thing where like they're not attaching it to the case. So you don't really necessarily need the case. You just need ventilation.
Get away with it, but it would be aluminum would be better. But here's the thing. I think people forget exactly how massive by modern standards those plastic ones were, even the very last plastic one that you just described. Forget about the toilet seat. If you ever looked at a toilet seat, you'd be like, was this always this big? Yeah, it was always that big. The ice book that people have fond memories of, massive, huge, gigantic, way bigger than you remember. Even those old plastic MacBooks, including the black MacBook that you charged extra for, or that last unibody one, they're a lot bigger, especially on things like the screen, like how thick is the top lid that has the screen in it. I'm not sure you can do a top lid like that with plastic. And I don't think they're going to have an aluminum top lid and a plastic bottom. So I think plastic is extremely unlikely. Engineering-wise, it could be done, but it seems like it would be, again, at this point, more effort for Apple to figure out how to make a viable laptop in modern proportions and performance with no fan out of plastic than would for them to just use aluminum, especially if they were using an existing case.
I mean, so I think you're probably right. I think plastic is a stretch in this case because one of the big benefits of using aluminum in this case is you get a lot of rigidity for a thin case. Plastic, you don't get a lot of rigidity. So typically, plastic electronics have some kind of metal frame inside of them. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily cover the entire thing, but it's like, you know, a frame, a skeleton basically made of metal to add rigidity in various points. So they would probably need to do something like that. And I can't imagine they would... I can't imagine that would be worth the trade-off. Like, I think they would probably, if they want to have a different case construction that is cheaper, my idea that I said last time about like just not doing it unibody, having it be like in panels, I think is more
gross.
Likely.
But, gross.
But again, like keep in mind too, this is if they are going for very inexpensive, they are probably going to want to replace that Walmart $650 Mac, you know, M1 MacBook Air. Now, one option, I believe they mentioned this on Upgrade, like one option is they could just keep using that old MacBook Air case.
I said that on the last episode. Stop crediting Upgrade for things that I said.
Okay. So,
oh, gracious.
So, you know, they could just keep using that case, which they are currently selling brand new in a $650 laptop. So that is possible to just keep using that at that price point. What I really hope is that they don't jack up that price point too much. That obviously, like, whenever Apple has a low price point and then they introduce like a replacement, like a generational leap for that product, they almost always raise the price at first and then eventually chip it down back to that product. So hopefully that would be like if they have to go above $650 for this new one when it's brand new, hopefully then after a year or two it's right back down there or maybe even lower. I think Apple could really get a lot of great market share if they could get it you know, as close to that $500 point as possible. Because if you look at what is out there in PC laptops, there's a lot of options at those prices, and they're not all garbage. Like, there are some decent ones that are around that price point. And again, if Apple's making that low-end iPad for $300, like, they can totally do this with most of those same parts, just throw a keyboard and trackpad on there. So we know they can do it if they choose to. I really hope they do, and I think that could be a very interesting product. I don't think, though, that that has to be a super cool, thin and light product. It really could just be that old MacBook Air case, or it could be, you know, like the M2 forward MacBook Air case, like the flat one that we have now. It could just be that case with lower spec parts in it. I hope they're more creative than that, and I hope they take the opportunity, if they're going to, you know, do something new, to really rethink a lot of those design choices to make it radically cheaper, not just $100 or $200 cheaper. But that is not necessarily the Tim Cook way. You know, the Tim Cook way normally is you just keep selling the older one and the older one and the older one and cut $100 off each year it goes older. Like, that's the Tim Cook way. And that, you know, that goes fine for a while. But if they really want to, like, dig down into that price range, like get really much lower than where they are now, they need something that's designed that way from the start. So I'm still very interested to see what this product ends up being. And I think it could be really, really cool. And, you know, I think the disaster scenario for my hopes and dreams here is it's literally just the MacBook Air with an A18 instead of an M4. and it's like $200 cheaper. That, I think, would be the very disappointing scenario. But I hope they do more than that.
We shall see. We are getting a call that Jason says that he said it before you, John. So
I'm
Mark,
sure he did, but I didn't hear it before I recorded it in my podcast.
Oh, okay.
So again, if you're on this podcast and you're going to credit somebody with, I think I heard somebody say this, you heard me say it.
Oh, John.
I mean, in all fairness, so Upgrade comes out on Mondays. I usually make a point to listen to it before we record because we cover a lot of the same topics.
I make a point not to listen to it before we record for exactly this reason.
Well, because we cover a lot of similar topics, I try to listen to them before we record. And so chances are I did hear about it from Jason before.
I know, but you heard it from me most recently. And it's most relevant to this show because it's the show that I'm on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. All right, moving on.
It's not like a last modified thing. It doesn't matter who said it most recently. You touched it last. Okay.
Well, it's in the trying to reach back into your memory, I think recency might make it more prominent. But apparently, primacy, is that the right word, makes it more prominent in your mind?
Moving on, gentlemen. Another piece of feedback that a lot of people sent in. Hey, maybe it'll run iPadOS instead of macOS. I don't want that.
That's just an iPad with a keyboard. We have those.
Yeah, no, but that's something that we've talked about for years that a lot of people want. And the rumor mill being what it is, it's not, you know, ridiculous to assume that maybe they got this wrong. What we're talking about is basically an iPad with a permanently attached keyboard with a hinge, like an iPad laptop. For the entire history of Apple selling various floppy or not so floppy keyboards that you attach to iPads, many people have said, I love iPadOS. I would love to use this as a laptop, but the floppy thing isn't right, and it's heavy, and it's weird, and can't they just sell me an iPad with a permanently attached keyboard and trackpad, just like, you know, a regular laptop, only it's not a laptop, it's an iPad. I think that's a product that some people still want. I don't think enough people want it that Apple's going to make it, but this type of rumor is the type of thing that could be misconstrued by a, you know, game of telephone or whatever the other analogy, lots of people feeling different parts of the elephant and not knowing which part, you know, like, you know, a cheaper device with an A series processor. But I think if it was an iPad, they would probably say, yeah, but it's a touchscreen, and that really, or there'd be like some kind of touchscreen Mac rumor. So for all the people out there who want an iPad with a permanently attached keyboard and trackpad, we hear you, but I think this rumor is not that, because I think if we would know if it had like a touchscreen or something.
Yeah, I don't think. And by the way, that would be the thing to call iBook if you were going to bring that name back.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I think the reality is that the iPad, for most of the people who want that, they're already using iPads and it's basically fine. For people who want, you know, inexpensive laptops or less expensive laptops, I should say, people who want less expensive laptops, usually there's something about iPadOS that makes them say, no, I can't do that, or I don't want to do that. That's not what I'm looking for. So ultimately, when people want a laptop, they they've already had the option to make an iPad into a laptop for many, many, many years. So all the people who are satisfied by that already have it. I think Apple could make a better version of that if they had it built in. You know, they wouldn't need all these, all this bulk for the case to attach to the iPad and the weird hinge and the counterweighting and everything. Like, the experience of using an iPad with the modern Magic keyboards, I think, frankly, is terrible. Because they're bulky. They're so thick. They're so heavy. It doubles the weight of the whole thing. And most of that is structure and, you know, apparatus that you wouldn't need if you did make a build a combined product that just had, like, a laptop base with a screen and it ran iPad OS. Like, the resulting combo device, if it was made that way from the start to have a keyboard, you know, you'd put the battery at the bottom. You'd have the thin screen. Like, you know, you'd make concessions that would make it far more compact and easier to mechanically operate. So it could be better. But I just don't think that the people who want to use an iPad as a laptop are so dissatisfied with this, with the current options, that this would gain Apple much market share. Whereas if you look at how many people want a laptop but don't want to pay $1,000 for it, and you can go on, like, you can go to any store, or you can go on Amazon or whatever, and you can buy a not awful PC laptop for $500. Like, that's a pretty big potential market to expand into. So I hope Apple really addresses that to try to expand the Mac market share meaningfully, rather than if this ends up just being an iPad with a keyboard built in, like, that's fine, but I think that's a much smaller incremental market above what they already have.
Yeah. Finally, I'm contractually obligated to bring up what a handful of people said. Cellular? The A18 already knows how to talk to cell
we
networks and
about
cell
this
modems.
On past episodes.
I know, but still, I got to say it again, because come on.
Keep trying to manifest, as the kids say. Mm-hmm. It'll happen for us someday.
But yep. See, we already have M4 cellular devices. They're called iPad Pros and iPad
Airs.
That's
also very fair. You're very right. All right. Hello, Future Marco. I know there's only a couple items left, but we are running a little long. Do you want to just plow through, or do we want to cut it here?
No, we can move these. That's fine.
Let's plow.
Next week. We got to save stuff for Thursday's episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. There we go.
All right. Goodbye, Future Marco.
Bye.
Okay. So a couple of days ago, I think, as we record this, news broke that Apple is suing the